Hi, this is John Udell. This week I spoke with Suzanne Peck, who's the CTO of Washington, D.C., and with Dan Thomas, who directs a program called D.C. Stat. In the middle of June, D.C. Stat began releasing a staged series of data feeds to the web. These feeds are in various XML formats, and they contain operational data about a variety of city services. The radical but refreshing idea behind all this is to make the delivery of taxpayer-funded services transparent and accountable.
Dan Thomas and Suzanne Peck from D.C.
Hi, folks. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. So here we are.
Yeah. So I would like to get the sort of 50,000-foot overview. There is some documentation about the Center for Innovation and Reform and the particular project that we're here to talk about today, which is Open Government kind of the working title for this project, or what do you want to call it?
Yes, no, I think that is absolutely wonderful.
Okay, so I mean the instant that...
And I think you are coining, because I've not heard that before, so I think you are coining a phrase of art, do you?
No, not me. I read that on one of your documents.
Okay, well, I think together we can coin a phrase of art, because
okay.
I've not heard that before, and that's exactly what it is we're doing.
Okay, so to set the context here, what Dan told me about that got me really excited was the feed pump, as he calls it, that was just switched on, I guess, about a week ago, which is in a series of stages going to relay out to anyone who wants to use this data a lot of operational information coming out of the city's systems about initially service requests to the mayor's office about things like street repaving and graffiti removal and such. But then there's a whole set of other data feeds that are scheduled to come out. I've got the list here somewhere. A bunch of stuff about real estate.
We can walk through that.
Yeah, we can walk through that. You know, the operative assumption here seems to be, first of all, that, well, this is everybody's data anyway, so why shouldn't it be transparent and available? But that beyond that, why shouldn't the performance of government be transparently measurable? Hence, now, presumably, the ability to dip into this data and generate reports about, well, how long is it taking to resolve these requests, you know, how many are still open, and so forth and so on, which is just an absolutely delightful concept. And I'd like to hear a little bit about just the genesis of this project. It's fascinating.
You've just given one of the most articulate rationales for what we're doing, I've heard, better than anything we've ever said. So, well, you really have it, John. This whole concept, I would say, comes from three genesis. One is that if cities are going to take your tax dollars for services, if cities exist, if city municipalities exist to organize efficient citizen services, business services, and visitor services, then they should be accountable for the efficiency and the level of service with which they use those dollars.
What a radical concept.
Genesis 2 is that historically, information about the efficiency and the level of services across an enterprise, a municipal enterprise, have been vertically available, function by function, agency by agency.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of data isn't real data, because real data doesn't occur vertically. Real data occurs horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
If, as a citizen, for example, the things that are most interesting to you and you are most focused on are, am I getting the services I am paying for? Am I safe? Are my children well educated? The answers to those questions don't come from any particular vertical agency. The answers to those questions come horizontally in an integrated way across a number of agencies, each of whom serves a part of the answer to that question. Am I getting efficient city services? Am I safe? Are my children well educated? are there economic opportunities for me and my family here? Are there good neighborhoods in which to live? And if those things are not here, how does my city go about making sure that I am on the road to getting them? Those are all happening horizontally.
And I think what's implicit in this is that, and when you say horizontal, what's implicit is that previously it may have been difficult even internally to correlate across data sets. But exposing this stuff is going to make it easier not only internally, but also externally to make a correlation between, let's say, decaying physical infrastructure in a particular neighborhood and crime in that neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
You're exactly right. So historically, this data was in vertical silos, and it was manual data, and it was in a variety of formats that could not easily be translated into a common standard format and combined, permutated in any number of ways, and certainly couldn't be done real time.
Mm-hmm.
So the third leg of this was technology. I mean, we literally never could have even begun not only to do CSTAT, but to do a number of architectural things without tool sets like EAI. We needed to have some mechanism that let us reach into, here in the city, we have 370 systems that allowed us to reach into those systems, into the data of those systems, and to translate on the fly through middleware the formats, and then to lay up all that data into data repositories in format, XML being one that we are principally using, in a format that it could be easily retrieved.
Mm-hmm.
Tools like EAI, like the Enterprise Service Bus, like search engines, like
business intelligence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or geographic information system.
GIS, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All of those things had to come to a maturity, John, and had to come to a maturity together before we were able to say, we have the capability in real time to transform stovepiped legacy data into any combination and permutation of geographically based data, and then to combine and permutate that data in a way that it answers questions about crime, about safety, about education, about economic opportunity. So, for example, to your exact point a minute ago, the city administrator, the first way that he used it was to establish crime hotspots in the city, and I think he did 39?
There were 14.
Oh, 14.
Mm-hmm.
Established 14 hotspots in a 68-square-mile area of the city. And they were probably the very worst hotspot was a place that was the Washington, D.C. equivalent of Chicago's Cabrini Green.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Sursum Corda, and it was a public housing development that was just like a Chicago Cabrini Green. Now, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to improve the crime stats, I'm going to put a larger police presence there, and that's historically what people did. You know, you put more police, and then you'd wait and see what happened, and things would improve somewhat, but the second you didn't have that many police there, things just went back down again. This ability to integrate data in real time and make it geographically based allowed us to do anticipative patterning on the front end and allowed us on the back end to ask the questions, why? Why are things happening?
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly, the police certainly understood that if there are crack houses, if there are abandoned autos, if there are nuisance properties, if there are poor school test scores, if there are high unemployment rates, that all of those things together not only positively contribute to crime, but if you remove them all, negatively, have a negative effect on crime.
Sure.
And
I mean, no,
it allowed
sure.
all of those factors to be geographically based and then to, first of all, predict what was going to happen and then to come in and make all of those factors together better, because when you made all of those factors together, it took making all of those factors together better in order to get the business outcome you wanted, which was a reduction in crime. And
Oh, sure. I think everyone will appreciate that the power of multidimensional analysis being brought to bear on these cluster kinds of problems.
Now, see, you just said in 10 words what it took me 400.
The additional insight here, I mean, you mentioned Chicago, and I'm sure you're aware of Adrian Holovaty's ChicagoCrime.org, which was one of the most striking early Google Maps mashups, where he took a bunch of actually data similar to one of the feeds that you guys are slated to be publishing later this year of police incidents, which was being published to the web, but in not a very useful form. So my understanding is that a great amount of the effort that went into his construction of that mashup was basically scraping web pages and doing a lot of reverse engineering of just the data formats to be able to get down to the data then to drive into the maps. And here, you've just given it to me. I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at a quick and dirty mashup that I made with your data and Google Maps, and I'm at 14th Street Northeast, and I click a marker, and up pops curb and gutter repair, 2504 14th Street, order date status, right? I don't know really anything about your internal information architecture, but I mean that sort of illustrates the point of the way in which there can be independent application development that is going to drive this process out in a way that engages many, many more people in all sorts of interesting collaborations, and that is to me just the most fascinating aspect of this.
I wanted to amplify something that you said. There's no question that ChicagoCrime.org was an inspiration for us. We had been building similar tools that had been made available inside of the district to staff here, leaders, managers, and staff within the various agencies. And one of the things that we did see is that we've always had the vision of providing this information out to the residents of the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
And the first things that we developed were analyst views. It was called analyst view and then neighborhood view, and those were directed at city staff of varying levels of technical skill.
Uh-huh.
Then we developed another product that we called mobile view that runs on wireless devices that is deployed out now to folks in the police department, to the Department of Public Works, Department of Transportation, and so on, where from a wireless point of view, they can gain access to the same information that we're beginning to publish out through these RSS feeds. So the final view that we had envisioned 2 years ago when we started the project was to create also this residence view. And what the world is a very interesting place, and we wanted to, in a way, this is an interesting, dare I say, experiment in the sense that we also wanted to understand if the internet community might pick this up if we were very proactive at going about and making it easily accessible to build things on top of it that we couldn't necessarily even conceive of, or that will essentially leverage the power of the Web 2.0 environment.
Well, there's no question about that in my mind. I'm looking at a point on the map. It's 14th Street Northeast. Curb and gutter repair is the annotation on the record that I put there. The reason I was able to put it there is because your data set includes latitude and longitude coordinates. Talk me through the process of how this data point got to where it is.
Okay, well, where it might start is that a telephone call from a resident comes in, and did you say it was a curb repair or something?
Yeah.
Okay, so it could be in front of their home, it could be they're walking down the street, and they will identify that there's this particular problem.
And they can call on the phone, or they can log in through the web and do it?
Correct. We have both of those methods, and in our mobile view application that we're in, just the next version that's coming out, people that are on city staff will actually be able to create new service requests also from the wireless devices.
So okay.
Three different points in which the information can be brought in. And that goes to a what we call the mayor's call center. It's a central point where we collect this information and goes into a proprietary system there called Hansen.
Okay.
That effectively logs a ticket. And from there, depending on the type of call in the curb and gutter, It is then sent out to the appropriate agency, the Department of Transportation, and they get a work order. And there's a service level agreement that is attached to these various types of services that the city provides. And they range from 2 days to, or 3 days to fill a pothole, to a certain amount of time to correct that curb problem. So when that's logged, what ends up happening in terms of the system, the DC Stat, our systems are plugged into that ticketing system, as well as numerous others around the city, and we receive that record within 5 minutes of it coming into the city.
Okay.
And we begin to track the performance of that service request. And I might note that an important thing to recognize about these feeds in the service requests to begin with, we do refresh those feeds hourly. So not only are we publishing this information to our residents, we're giving it to them at almost the same time that we're finding out. So they're in the loop from the beginning.
So let's talk a little bit more about the organization of the data then, because it wasn't entirely clear to me. I mean, I was able to sort of spray these points onto a map, but I wasn't really sure what I had accomplished or what kind of analysis I was going to be able to do, partly because true XML is self-describing, but I don't really have any documentation that explains what these dates exactly mean. I saw a bunch of orders that were all dated on the same day as the feed, but I couldn't imagine that they were all new orders that day. And then there were some that went.
They are all new orders.
Those are all new orders.
For that day?
For that day, yes.
Really? Okay.
Actually, let me correct myself there. We have new orders. It's like a journal. Also, if there's a change in the disposition of an order that came earlier, it's closed, it moves from open status to open overdue status.
Okay.
Those types of things.
But it means activity. Those are all new that day activity of some kind, either original activity or closure activity.
I got it. Okay. So, and then another question is, when I first hit your data set, I think I picked up, I think it was actually the first day, right? So I got a big dump of like 7 or 8 megabytes worth of stuff, and then it looks like and I'm talking about the full XML files, not the RSS and ATOM, but the full files with all the detail in them.
Right.
And then it looks like it's running a couple hundred K every day after. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, there's actually three different products, and it's important to distinguish between them.
Okay.
The RSS feed is intended for human consumption, and it's intended for people to subscribe to, and it comes out both daily and weekly. Summarizations and statistical reports of what happened in the previous day or in the previous week.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. In fact, okay. I'm subscribed
so
to that one.
That's one of the feeds. The second feed is the very large file that you described, the multi-gigabyte, or excuse me, megabyte file. And that is a daily file with a lot of property information that's in the XML. That's intended to be brought down and brought into, say, an Excel spreadsheet, or brought into, say, an Access database or something like that, for people to then begin to start. They can start doing summations of their own. They can go beyond what we've canned and packaged on our daily and weekly reporting.
Exactly.
Use their own information.
Yeah, I stuck it into an XQuery database, for example.
Okay.
What I noticed is that, though I hadn't actually been there for about a week, and then today the files were sort of like the 19th and 20th of June, but, you know, so I had the dailies, but the stuff between the 13th or 14th and the 19th wasn't there, and the original file that I had populated my database with was gone. So it's like it's right now it's a window that scrolls off.
There's another link on our site that takes you to the archive. And that's where you will pick up things that are not current information.
Right. Well, it's actually the archive that I'm talking about right now. I'm on the archive page, and under XML, it has June 19 and June 20. Is it intended to be a full archive of all of the of everything, or?
We have a father-grandfather scheme where we're going to be doing things. We're going to roll it up at a monthly basis.
Okay.
And then in the current month, we will have the month to date. So I to be honest, off the top of my head, I don't remember the exact way that we're doing that, but the point is that on that archive, we will be populating it so that you can retrieve all the historic information as well.
Okay.
Dan mentioned the specific data sets.
Yeah.
Can talk for a minute about those data sets?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So up now is all of the citizen, all the service request data, the citizen service request information.
Yeah.
Which is residential service requests, citizen service requests for things like bulk trash removal, downed tree. I myself call with great frequency. That there is a portal tunnel into the city, the 3rd and D Street tunnel, and occasionally there is homeless detritus about, and I will call in to get that removed. So that information is already there.
Mm-hmm.
On the 26th, Dan's going to put up vacant property information.
Mm-hmm.
On the 9th of July, he's going to put up MPD crime information. You can see a cadence of about every 2 weeks. So future two-week increments are going to be things like real estate. The crime information is things like crime reports and arrests. And then we'll be putting up things like real estate sale information, property location information, liquor license information.
You've obviously had access internally to this stuff for quite some time.
Yes.
Apart from the raw data that's becoming available for people to use as they may choose to, what kinds of public-facing applications are on the web now that make use of this stuff as it sits behind the firewall?
The Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs has a whole set of business information that aids online application for small business licenses. The District of Columbia is a city of 90,000 small business people, and the background information for them to not have to come to brick and mortar and stand in line for a day to get their business license, but to be able to get that on the web is available.
Mm-hmm.
Our DMV application, when I came to the city, the true horror of the city to residents was having to procure or renew their driver's or vehicle license. It literally took an entire day. Now, because all that DMV information is available forward facing, it is a 4-minute web application.
That's cool. Yeah, it was the same way in Baltimore when I was there, and I hope it's improved there as well. On top of the data, like I said, I was poking around in it and I was able to do some stuff, and then was feeling the need for some, well, if you guys were supporting software developers sort of officially, there would be, you know, documentation, sample applications, things like that to get people jump started. You know, what are your thoughts along those lines? It's obviously, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that?
First, if you do go into the feeds, there's quite a bit of XML data in there, as you discovered.
Mm-hmm.
I should say that what we did and gave you access to is a soft launch, in the sense that we're trying to work out all the little kinks, because this is a rather new area.
Yeah.
But we are putting together information about the data properties that we're publishing first. And there's some, what I'm hearing from you is it left you hungry for a little bit more.
Well, that's true, but it also made me think that, well, I mean, I could easily infer the wrong thing. In other words,
yeah,
if I look in your data set and I see, well, there's this number of records that apparently were ordered on this date and that they're still not signed off on, and these many are listed as overdue, I might or might not reach the correct conclusion.
Yes, and
right?
So we are preparing information about that so that you can do the correct interpretation. Some of the other secret nuggets that are down there that we're going to be acquainting people with are there's some keys that exist in these files that you're going to see will show up in the other data sets as well. Key information that has to do with, for example, the address information that we're putting out there. So you can begin to crosswalk this data, say, spatially.
Yeah.
We've given a number of geographic kind of aggregation identifiers where you can, if you live in a particular ward, you can aggregate things out in that manner. So we've provided a number of things, and we know some ways to apply that because we are using it internally in that sense. So that is coming. In some ways you can't use it until at least the second data set shows up. But definitely there's some additional material coming in through there.
Now, there is an interesting potential downside here to this, which I'm sure you've thought about, and it is that, and I've always found this to be a fascinating thing, but there's this thing that happens around public data where people discover when it actually is public, it frightens them. Like, well, I didn't really mean for it to be that public. For example, information about people's property taxes, that were, you know, the kinds of things you used to, it was always notionally public, but you had to schlep down to City Hall and dig through a pile of stuff to find it. And so, you know, it wasn't something that was going to be showing up in somebody's spreadsheet as part of a comparison with a bunch of other things, right? Or voter registration. I think there was a case in, I'm going to say it was in the state of New York somewhere a couple of years ago, where people were shocked to discover that their party affiliations were discoverable on the web. Like, well, that's an invasion of privacy. Well, no, they're defined to be public records, right? But the thing is that, you know, they were notionally public, but they were sort of practically obscure. And then so
big observation,
right? And so, you know, I'm just kind of looking through, thinking one of the things that is likely to come out of this is if I receive a liquor license or a business registration. And, you know, all this public information about the type of my business, name, address, blah, 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 is there. I mean, you know, one of the kinds of entrepreneurial opportunities that's going to arise is they're going to be getting spammed by a lot of people who, you know, see that there's an opportunity to do something related to that, which is, it's just going to happen, and it's not something that should derail a project like this in any sense. But it just kind of, I just wonder, you know, what you think about that.
Another kind of a difficult situation that I'm aware of along the line of what you're speaking about is in Florida, where they've gone in and been scanning all of the court records as a document management project and then made that information available on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you saw that, but there were a lot of things where people's names and social security numbers and so on were then exposed. They hadn't been redacted before the information was made available. And so we're conscious of these particular kinds of things. And so what we are doing, for example, with the service requests, and perhaps that's one of the important points to make, is that this is the address at where a city service was provided.
Right.
Not necessarily the person that called in the request. So there's a distinction there in that sense.
Right.
There are a number, and the district is one of them, locales that do publish on the internet the tax information.
Right.
And so we're trying to balance the need to protect people's privacy. That is a very important aspect of this. But it is in a world today where actually information is being locked up and. Have no doubt. I mean, what we're hearing is actually that many, many people do have our information. However, we don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. We don't know what they're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is actually a very refreshing approach to that particular situation.
Oh, it absolutely is. I'm just sort of noticing that there's, on the one hand, there's this tremendously liberating and democratic aspect to all of this. But on the other hand, it is just a part of a growing cultural trend in the direction of transparency, and it's something that people are all going to be adjusting to over, well, you know, certainly the course of the rest of our lives. And there will be unexpected, unanticipated consequences that are going to sort of take people by surprise.
Yes.
But, you know, that's the nature of the world we live in, and I'm not sure when you really think it through you'd want it to be any other way.
And the democracy point that you're making is really central to the motivation behind what we're doing here, because in a way we're moving, I believe, more towards a true democracy, because this information has always been accessible, but it's actually typically accessible to folks that have the time and resources to go get it.
Exactly, exactly right.
And that might be, let's say, in the case of even the press, there has been, you know, the FOIA laws and so on, and that has enabled folks to go and litigate the rich man's sport to collect this information. But then there's still an interpretation going on between the press themselves and the residents of the community. Well, here what we're doing is putting it on a level playing field, even for every person that can gain access to a computer.
Exactly. And when we get a few, I will call them lead users or user innovators, in Eric von Hippel's terminology, you know, active civilian types who seize onto this stuff and, you know, bring it into the political discourse. And so when someone says, well, I make the following claim about, you know, what I did or didn't do with the crime rate or the job rate over this period of time, someone can say, well, here's data. You know, that's your interpretation. You know, this is mine. Let's discuss the differences.
And, exactly.
You know, I mean, to be able to have a reference data set to ground that conversation is tremendous. It's just tremendous to contemplate what that can
be
like.
You know, John, I just tested. I live in Fairfax County, Virginia.
Yeah.
And so I just while you were talking, I went on to Fairfax County, Virginia tax records and put in my own address just to see, you know, what it is that's there.
Yeah, what'd you find?
And so there was a you can see, there's my address. There's absolutely everything about my house, including all of my assessment values,
mm-hmm,
in every tax year, all of the sales information about it.
Yep.
All of the resident, everything about the building itself.
Yep.
The map, the structure size, but it's not only physical information, it is financial information.
Yep.
It's literally everything, including there's something that says neighborhood sales, where I can go in, I've just brought it up, and I can get the
comps.
Sales, the comps of everything that is around me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all. Including
driving directions to her front door.
Including driving directions, right. So it is, you're dead on when you say it's always been there, but it hasn't ever been this darn easy, and it's just amazingly easy.
Yeah.
So what is the reaction of people to seeing information that they always could have seen but never did? I think that's a fascinating question as a reporter for you to ask, and as a writer for you to ask.
Right. Well, I mean, I know what the reaction is. It is, in many cases, shock, and a sense of privacy violation, which then gradually gives way to, oh, well, yes, this is public data. You know, and I just never really confronted the reality of that.
The one point of human behavior that I've observed with our systems that might be interesting to you is that invariably, when folks sit down, at least within the district, when they first get exposed to the systems, where a thing to understand about DC Stat is that we've done broad integration across these data sets and pulled that together.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that they do is they type in their own home address.
Mm-hmm.
What do they know about me? And then they're able to kind of poke around and say, oh, okay, you know. Information about my service calls, you know, my house value and so on. Well, then the very next thing that they do is they say, well, what do you know about my neighbor? So they then do a little exploration there. And then they start to say, well, wait a second. What do you know about my neighborhood? And how do I compare with folks in the next door neighborhood? So
yeah.
There's almost this Maslow's hierarchy or something. I don't know what to call it. But it's amazing. The pattern repeats over and over again whenever people start to get exposed to the system.
Well, we should probably wrap up here. You know, I want to say I really am just delighted to speak with you guys and to see that this is happening. I know that it's going to turn into all sorts of interesting, unexpected results.
One of the candidates, by the way, we are now in a mayoral election period. Our Mayor Anthony Williams, greatly beloved, who has brought the city back from a $500 million deficit to $1.5 billion surplus, has elected not to run for a third term, although the district allows you to be mayor for life if you would like. There are no term limits. And so we are facing a September 12th primary in this city. The Democratic primary is tantamount to election, although there is a November general. One of the principal candidates for now running for mayor says that this D.C. stat is, and he says it in his short 10-minute speech out on the hustings, that D.C. stat is the mechanism by which he is going to bring accountability to every leader and manager in the city, and it is the principal mechanism by which he is going to govern his administration if he is elected. That's very powerful stuff.
It is, and I will just be fascinated to see how this turns out.
John, you're ending this conversation the way, literally for 8 years, every single writer, reporter, editor has ever ended a conversation with us. Would you like to know how that is?
How's that?
I really have to go now. I'd like to stay longer, because we never get tired. Anyway, it was really fun talking to you.
Thanks very much, guys.